Welcome into My Guys in the Desert. I'm Danielle Avari here in the VSiN studio inside the South Point Sportsbook, subbing in for Matt Eumanns today, and also on the desk with me, Wes Reynolds here, as always on a Thursday. We have the U.S. Open. It's already underway, but after a little bit of a delay due to some fog, so actually some of your favorite golfers might not have teed off yet. Bryson DeChambeau going off in just about 45 minutes or so. Jordan Spieth also just in the next hour or so. But looking at the leaderboard as of now, Russell Henley sitting on top, 3 under through 17. And then Brooks Koepka also 2 under, tied for third with Francesco Molinari and Xander Schauffele. Wes, early, but how are your bets looking?
Xander Schauffele looking pretty good, and Jason Kokrak just gave one away, but still on the first couple pages of the leaderboard. So just trying to get in the clubhouse here. This is the early flight, so keep in mind if you're watching this, obviously a West Coast U.S. Open. So this is going to go to about 10 or 11 Eastern tonight, 7 to 8 on the West Coast. So the afternoon groups, as you've mentioned, have not yet teed off. The morning group's still finishing. Russell Henley going to try to be the first to get to be the low man in the clubhouse. House 3 under through 17. You mentioned RCB also at 3 under. Molinari, Koepka, Schauffele, and Adam Hadwin 2 under. Good day for the Italians so far, though. Both brothers Molinari, Francesco and Eduardo, on the first page of the leaderboard. Also Guido Migliozzi in with the 71. So Forza Italia at the U.S. Open is the Italian contingent off to a very good start.
Does it affect these golfers to have to tee off a little bit later, at least in any way? Would that affect how you would look at how their round is going to go?
Well, and look, it's going to split. Obviously, the late afternoon groups or the early groups tomorrow. Basically, what you see kind of, and you haven't really seen a weather bias, I don't think, materialize as of yet. The wind doesn't seem to be blowing very hard. Seems to be perfect conditions out there in San Diego. But when you look at it, the morning groups usually get maybe slightly purer greens on these POA greens because they're just mowed in the morning. So they're a little less bumpy. They kind of get a little bumpier in the afternoon. So maybe that's kind of the only bias here in terms of an advantage if you're an early player. But if you're an early player today, you obviously have to go out late tomorrow.
Well, some news also in the NBA just broke. I wanted to get to really quick before we go into the NBA games for tonight, or rather just game, Nets and Bucks. Some Mavs are moving on from the Mavericks organization. I know a couple days ago we had Donnie Nelson, GM, move on, but Rick Carlisle, who led Dallas to the 2011 NBA championship, informed the Mavs owner, Mark Cuban, today that he won't be returning as coach next season. He had 2 years left on his contract. He spent 13 seasons as the Mavs coach. His announcement, of course, came after Wednesday's announcement that GM Donnie Nelson was out after 24 seasons with the franchise. I know Luka Doncic was not happy about his departure, but he said he didn't really have control over that. What is going on with the Mavs organization right now?
Well, there was a piece in The Athletic a couple days ago, which Mark Cuban came out and said was BS. Of course, he's not going to confirm it if it's showing any type of dissension in the ranks within the organization. And this is all about Bob Vulgaris, who a lot of gambling Twitter will know as Harala Bob on Twitter, who was a sports gambler, but an analytics guy, had a dream of kind of running his own team one day, and he's one of the main guys in the front office, not the ultimate overseer of as being in terms of having all control, but you kind of saw some things come out with that he's not been really great with people and stirring it up a little bit. So you see Donnie Nelson leave after all of these years, and you're kind of thinking, and I tweeted out yesterday, I was like, I wonder if Donnie Nelson was the leaker of this story to The Athletic. So he eventually resigns. Rick Carlisle also resigns because Mark Cuban really, as an owner, is not all that meddlesome. You know, he knows all that's going on. Obviously, it's his team and it's his money, but he doesn't really I don't think he knows all the personnel moves, but he doesn't really tell guys what to do. He doesn't try to play GM or player personnel director. So you've seen two changes here in the last couple days that obviously there's a little bit of smoke to the fire from that Athletic piece, which came out earlier this week. And as far as Rick Carlisle, a lot of people may point to Boston here in terms of him being the head coach there, former player there. Also keep in mind his tie to the Pacers organization, where he was a coach. He was fired before he went to Dallas. But Larry Bird, who Rick Carlisle and he are longtime, very close friends. Larry Bird, not running the show in Indiana, but still the advisor to the president of basketball operations, quote unquote. So he at least gets his 2 cents in.
Yeah, and
they at least value his opinion. So maybe a possibility. There is an opening in Indiana to bring Rick Carlisle back to Indiana. But Indiana and Boston, at least, are the early kind of speculations to where Rick Carlisle might end up. And he is a championship winning head coach. And most of those guys aren't out of work at this standpoint.
Looks like it could be a bad move for Dallas, though. We have one NBA game to get to and more right here on My Guys in the Desert. Welcome in to My Guys in the Desert. I'm Danielle Avari, again, sitting in for Matt Humans. You can find him on Follow Money this week on VSiN.com. I also have Wes Reynolds joining me on the desk in the VSiN studio inside the South Point Sportsbook today. Before we get to tonight's NBA action, let's talk about last night, because we saw an appearance from Playoff P. How about that? Paul George delivered with a 37-point playoff career high, 16 rebounds and 5 assists in the upset win over the Jazz, 119-111. Clippers lead the series 3-2 now. There was a quote from Paul George. He said, "It was no secret. I knew I had to be big tonight and got to be big going forward. I don't love the grammar, but I do love the performance." Wes, what'd you think of last night's game?
Yeah, we did see Playoff P and not Punchline P, and they needed him to be Playoff P last night because their backs were up against the wall with Kawhi obviously being out. And what you saw with that line, I think it was 2.5 before any of this news came out, this thing closed 8.5, and it's like, okay, you got to buy a little bit, I think, on the
overreaction.
Yeah, it is, because look, it crosses all these key numbers. That means across 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and even 8 in terms of the market. And when it goes that much, you got to think that's just basically a major overreaction. So I was surprised to see people laying 8. I know it's easy to say after the fact, after the outcome's been decided, but I was surprised to see people laying 7.5 and 8 in this spot. So now the Clippers up 3-2 in the series. Reggie Jackson, I think, was also big for these guys last night, hit some big shots. And, you know, that's to the point of the Clippers' depth, which I know JVT was on the air yesterday all over the network kind of talking about the fact, hey, you know, Kawhi is a big blow, but this team does have depth, and this team does have guys that can score the ball. Reggie Jackson, Marcus Morris, Batum hit a couple big threes. So now they go up 3-2, going to try to close it out in the Staples Center. Early action you're seeing, though, at least for tomorrow night, looks like the Jazz are getting at least a little bit of an action to try to take this into a 7-game series. -2, that's basically where it is. Most of the opinion I've seen so far is early on the Jazz, so keep in mind you may get some buyback on the Clippers late if this line goes up anymore. Still basically what it was in the opener, but I think most of the early action at least appears to be on Utah.
Right, and I have to assume if you're a Suns fan that you're hoping this does go to 7 games, especially with the news about Chris Paul dealing with his COVID health concerns yesterday. The other game going on last night, before we get to Kenny White, we are going to bring him in as well to talk about some games. The Sixers blew a 26-point second half lead in a stunning Game 5 home loss to the Hawks. From ESPN Stats and Info, the 76ers are the only team to blow an 18-point lead in back-to-back playoff games in the last 25 seasons. They had a win probability of 95.5% at one point in Game 4. It reached 99.7 late in the third quarter of Game 5. The blown 26-point lead tied for the third largest blown lead in a playoff game over the last 25 postseasons. The Hawks were 16-1 at one point in the live betting market on DraftKings. Now, the series line, Hawks -162 and the 76ers +130. You're getting plus money on the Sixers in the series here.
Well, and there's not maybe a lot of confidence here, because when you blow a game like that, that's really 2 in a row, because they should have won Game 4, obviously should have won last night in Philadelphia, and you just didn't get a lot of production outside of Joel Embiid and Steph Curry. 73 of the 106 points for the 76ers. Ben Simmons, 8 points, 4 rebounds, 9 assists. Ben Simmons has to take more than 4 shots. You would think Tobias Harris did not play well. He was 2 of 11 from the floor, only 4 points last night. They didn't really get a lot from the bench. And, you know, the Sixers kind of let him hang around a little bit. And Doc Rivers has been down this road before. He's blown 3-1 leads as a coach when he was with the L.A. Clippers. So they've been here before. And this was an Atlanta team that was really struggling against this Philadelphia defense, but found a way. Philadelphia went cold. Trae Young, 39 points in 40 minutes, and they absolutely needed that. They got some balanced scoring. Lou Williams and Danilo Gallinari off the bench with double-figure games. So Atlanta, all of a sudden, they're playing with house money, and they got some confidence here. I did not like what I saw out of the 76ers last night.
No, and it looks like, you said, Joel Embiid just really lumbering out there, dealing with that knee injury. And I know one person who is happy to see the Hawks winning, our own Kelly Bidlin, producer on Primetime Action, because he has about a million tickets on the Hawks, a million futures tickets. Without further ado, bring in our guest, Kenny White, professional handicapper. Kenny, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Danielle. Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me, Wes. Always glad to be with you. And we have some sick, exciting times coming up here in the world of sports.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to start with the NBA playoff game for tonight. Wes and I actually haven't gotten into it yet. We were talking a little bit about the Mavs news that just broke. But tonight we have a Nets and Bucks game. The Bucks are favored by 5.5. Your total sitting around 220. What's your read on this game?
Yeah, very interesting, and obviously with the injuries in the NBA right now, it makes everything touchy, and you get further and deeper into a series, you start to lose value because bookmakers are starting to, you know, they make their adjustments, the bettors are making adjustments and moving numbers. I'm going to lean to the Bucks here in this game. I made them 7.5 with that home court being such a big value, and also not knowing if James Harden, what percentage he is. We know he's not 100%, that's for sure. So he's a five-point player. If he's not in, he's somewhere in between that, I guess. So I've kind of taken 2.5 points for him off, and that's kind of given me enough edge to give that game to the Bucks. The hardest game to win is the closeout game. I think it'll be tough for the Nets, and they're a one-man team right now, basically, with Kevin Durant. So I like the Bucks, but I do like the game over a little bit better. I got a little better play on the over. Remember, this total opened up 240 in game one, has been adjusted all the way down to 220. And yeah, they've been some low scoring games, but the pace has been okay enough that if they shoot decent, they should be able to get over 220 tonight.
Kenny, let's turn to tomorrow's games. And actually, before we brought you on, Danielle and I were recapping game five of Atlanta-Philadelphia and that collapse there by the 76ers. Now we go to game six. 76ers lay in 3 in the ATL. 222, basically. There's some 221 and a halves out there as well in the market. Look, Philadelphia's defense, I think, throughout the series has actually been very good. But we've kind of seen it in the second half of these games, especially in the fourth quarter last night. The scoring just absolutely disappears for this team, and it looks like you like the under and think that that's going to continue.
Yeah, I do. The Sixers defense has been their strength all year long, and the deeper we get into a series, the more each team will learn. There's no more surprises. So obviously, yeah, games get lower scoring. I like the last couple of games where they've come. The pace has been slower in each game in this series. The first game was 106. They went up and down the court in 252 points. But since that time, three of those last four games have gone under this total. This one just with so much more meaning. The Hawks are trying to close it out, and the Sixers are trying to stay alive. I think it'll be a close game down to the wire.
We also have NHL action going on, the playoffs, and we have a couple series tied up at 1-1. What do you make of this Lightning Islanders Game 3 matchup tonight?
Well, isn't it amazing, pro sports, that sometimes they're so easy to read? With a 5-1 win in game one, coming off the Colorado series, I really think the Golden Knights kind of fell in love with themselves and thinking, we're the favorites to win it all now. We've got the biggest edge of anybody. We're going to the Stanley Cup, and we may be playing the Islanders and not even Tampa, because Tampa lost their first game. Well, there you go. The visitors, the Canadians made a huge adjustment on defense. They got the lead. That's the way they play best. Vegas knows that. Now we're going back to Montreal. There will only be 2,500 fans in the stands. So no home ice edge. No home ice edge. Zero. Some people think that could affect the visitor because the Vegas Golden Knights have been playing in front of 18,000 screaming fans. Now they're going to be in an auditorium where you can hear a pin drop on the ice. So, again, there's no home ice there for me. I think the Vegas Golden Knights should be about a $2 favorite in this game. I think they get off early. They will score early, and that could help create a lot of scoring in this game. I think 5 is a low number. I thought 5.5 was the correct number. So I like the Golden Knights, and I would say it's correlated parlay to the over 5.
Well, Kenny, where there is a home ice advantage, as we've seen this season, is right in the Nassau Coliseum. 21-4-3, the Islanders were in the regular season, and 4-2 so far in this postseason. And you could really tell in that Bruins series, it absolutely affected the Bruins, and they were able to kind of shut, I think, a very at least potent first line for the Bruins, and they were able to shut that offense down. Now, obviously, they have another potent offense with the Lightning, but Islanders have been doing a solid job against the power play here, and Tampa Bay's kind of been living off that power play, but only 1-7 in two games. Seeing a little bit of trickle money on the Islanders here. Do you like the home team this evening?
I'm right on my price that I made on the game was $1.35 on Tampa on the road, but you're right. And I did give home ice, not full home ice, because I don't do that when the visitor's the better team. Tampa Bay is an experienced enough club that they'll be able to handle, I believe, that pressure. They're just so talented. I think the Tampa is actually the best team in the NHL. They're my highest rated team. But yeah, you can't forget about that home ice edge, and that's why I'm right on the number in this game. I don't want to bet against them, but I can't bet on them. I think the total's just right at 5. If you can get 5, maybe plus maybe $1.20, $1.25 in that range, there might be a little bit of value on the under.
Do you see any value on the series price for either of these matchups at this point?
Yeah, I think Vegas now is a nice little edge in the series price because it was so high before. Now you're looking at laying 330. They're the far better team in this series, much more experienced. I think they have better lines. I think they're more physical team and much better scoring team. Defensively, we have a slight edge still over Montreal, and that's their strength. So, yeah, at minus 330, there's definitely some value there. The other series, I had the Lightning priced about 260, so it's about right on my number.
Kenny, looking at the baseball menu tonight, a very short card, couple afternoon games. So a condensed card as we usually get on Thursday and one game underway. Arizona losing again. Rinse, repeat. They can't win on the road. But anything you like on tonight's baseball card tonight?
You know, I didn't spend enough time on it to give you anything on baseball here because right now, to give you the skinny and the short story, I've invested about $500,000 in my website. It's going to be a completely different website in the next month. We're going to have about 25 different handicappers on the site, sports videos every day, statistics and different type of numbers, that advanced numbers, advanced metrics, adjusted numbers, strength of schedule numbers. So it's been a huge project that we've been putting together. The magazine just came out. We just got them delivered to our offices in Columbus, Ohio. The website was supposed to be done by now, but that big of a project, the programmers are 2 to 3 weeks behind. My old website is still up. So by end of day, magazines will be available for purchase. $12.99 for the hard copy plus shipping and handling. If you want the PDF, it's $19.99. Then you'll be sent to Zuzu.com where you can preview the magazine. And I will get some magazines down to you guys there in the studio on Monday.
We appreciate it, Kenny, because I can't wait to dig into that magazine. And as you know, if you've read this publication, by the way, Kenny rates every single player in terms of a value. So you see like the first, the second, the third unit, rates all the home field advantages, also gets into the FCS football too. So it is an invaluable tool for not only a college football fan, but especially a college football bettor. So definitely cop that. But Kenny, let me ask you about the NBA game that we didn't get to a few minutes ago. We now have the LA Clippers trying to close it out at Staples tomorrow night against the Utah Jazz. Now the second game, they kind of fallen hero theory, if you will, last night as they were able to get it done. Paul George was absolutely fantastic. But now you got Utah coming to Staples, backs against the wall. -2 is basically where it's open. I've seen the majority of at least early opinion on the Utah Jazz. Do you share that same opinion?
Yeah, I'm going to lean to the under in this one, Wes. And it very, you know, it's a tough game. When you're looking, Mike Conley's been out. Mitchell is not 100%, and now we lose Kawhi Leonard. It's just such a shame we're losing so many superstars in the game. And Paul George did step up. You're right, it's the fallen hero game where everybody plays that much better, 10% more out of each player to pick up that slack. But it's hard to do every single game. That -6 points off your power rating for no Kawhi will catch up to you. And now we're going back to Los Angeles where there's not as many fans. It's not a sellout. I don't even think the building is half full. So they're not a great crowd anyway. The LA fans have never been a very loud crowd. So I can't give any home court whatsoever. I think the Jazz should be about 3, 3.5 in this game. If Mike Conley comes back, I can make the Jazz -5 and would be a solid play on them, especially on the money line, laying $1.30.
Well, looking at these remaining teams, are any of the teams that are down in those 3-2 series, do any of them, do you believe in the most to be able to come back and possibly win in seven?
I think the Milwaukee Bucks are the team. They're the healthiest of all those teams, and they have the superstars, they have the shooters, and they play the defense to pull that upset off. They got beat by a one-man show the other night in Kevin Durant. It just shocked me. I had them that night. They're up 16 at half, and I was amazed when I saw the final score. They're much better at home. I think they get it done here. And I think the pressure will be on the Nets. We have no idea if James Harden can, you know, muster up a game six and a game seven. He played a lot of minutes in game five for a guy who has a gimpy hamstring. He looked good, didn't shoot well, but he was able to play those minutes. That may take more of a toll, so we don't know. So I'll take this Bucks team to come back and win the series.
All right. Well, I know our producer, Ben Wilson, is a Bucks fan. He's happy to hear that, Kenny. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Hey, thank you very much for having me. Best of luck to everybody on the weekend.
Thank you, Kenny.
Yeah, so you can find Kenny White at KWhiteyVegas on Twitter. What did you think of his suppositions about those games?
Well, I agree with him. I'm not going to bet the Bucks because I'm already kind of pot committed here with a +1.5 in terms of the series. So If they win tonight, I cash that. I was debating, okay, do I want to try to get greedy here a little bit in middle and take the +6 on Brooklyn, where it's kind of like a middle/hedge, Danielle. It kind of works both ways. You're hoping for the middle, but if at least you get the hedge, then that's okay. But I do think that this is Milwaukee's game to win. I don't know if Kevin Durant can do that two times in a row. So I would kind of lean to Milwaukee here, but I thought the price was a little bit high. But real quick before we go to break, Updating the U.S. Open, we do have a leader in the clubhouse, that being Russell Henley, a birdie at 18, 4-under 67, and Francesco Molinari, 3-under through 60, or with the 68, just finished here on the 18. Brooks Koepka is in at 2-under par, 69. He was one of the tournament favorites. So early leaders or early groups really starting to finish, and then we're going to get the afternoon groups on the tee here in about the next hour.
Well, we'll talk about the U.S. Open more when we get back right here on My Guys in the Desert. The OddsTrader.com studio at the South Point Casino. Make sure you check out OddsTrader.com. And remember, you can download the free OddsTrader app right now and start winning with the up-to-the-second info you need. Daniel Alvari and Wes Reynolds back here in the VSiN studio. Huge thanks to Kenny White for joining us in the last segment. And now we're getting an update of the U.S. Open day one at Torrey Pines. Who's looking good so far, Wes?
Yeah, Russell Henley, currently the first-round leader at 4-under par, 67. And at some places, you can still bet end of round leader. I know BetMGM currently has this up, and he is +120 to get home. Keep in mind, you are just now having the second groupings, the second half of the field going to be teeing off here in the next 30 to 45 minutes or so. So Russell Henley holding at +120. Rafa Cabrera-Bello, though, at 10-1. He is 3-under through 14 holes, so he does have four holes to play. Francesco Molinari in the house at 3-under. Brooks Koepka at 2-under. Xander Schauffele and Matt Fitzpatrick also playing the 18th right now. Actually, Fitzpatrick playing the 18th, Xander Schauffele playing the 9th because he teed off. They do split tees here with such a big field on the back nine. So if you're looking at BetMGM, just a little bit of an adjustment. Brooks Koepka right now 7-1, your favorite. Xander Schauffele 9-1. John Rahm, his price has not been adjusted. He was the tournament favorite basically at 10, 11-1. So that's pretty much where you could have got him. DeChambeau and Johnson 16-1 and 18-1 respectively. McIlroy 20-1. So you really haven't seen any drifts necessarily on these afternoon guys. So that's what you're looking at right now. Other guys that did get in the house with red figures, that would be Eduardo Molinari. So both Molinari brothers under par here today. Patrick Rogers, the pride and joy of Avon, Indiana, is at 1-under par. Fabian Gomez, 1-under par. Matthew Wolf, 1-under par. Looking at his round, though, he has been absolutely all over the place. If you look at Matt Wolf, 18 holes and he only made 5 pars. So that tells tells you that he made a ton of birdies on this course, but he gave a ton back. I believe Matthew Wolf made 8 birdies on his round today. Of course, he's been off for a couple months due to injury, so you didn't really know how he was going to play here. He was an absolute wild card, and that's why you saw him at close to triple digits, at least before the tournament, because you didn't really know how he was going to play. But Matthew Wolf with 8 birdies on 18 holes, only gets in at 1 under par, though, because of all the bogeys, and when you only make 5 pars, you're going to give a lot of strokes back. So Matthew Wolf in at 1 under. Daniel Berger still out there on the course, I believe, through 17 holes at 1 under. A couple players have gotten in at even par, but then just looking down the board at some big names that had bad rounds today. Webb Simpson, 9 over par on route to shooting 80, unless he does not par the 18th. So Webb Simpson, a big number. Kevin Na, big number at 7 over par. Tony Finau, like I said, it's kind of a mixed bag. I've got some good starts with a couple guys, notably Xander Schauffele, but Tony Finau, a very disappointing round today. 4 over through 16 holes today. So this is a guy that's always played well at Torrey Pines, not so much today. Also joining him at 4 over, Colin Morikawa, who a lot of very smart people like this week, but you wonder if this is going to be just a little bit too long of a course for a guy that's arguably the best approach player on tour. And then bookmakers are letting out a cheer here across Las Vegas, Danielle, because they took a lot of exposure on Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson, 4 over
mostly par.
Mostly
sentimental bets?
A lot. Yeah. I mean, you know, and that's pretty much what it was, I think, for the PGA, considering he had no form. But you had to make an adjustment because you had a guy that was 50 years old win a major, so they did adjust it down a little bit. Now, wasn't as ridiculous as some book in town that had him at like 8-1. I know Mitch Moss Follow the Money right here on VSiN was tweeting that out and saw Phil Mickelson 8-1. I was like, is that for a top 10 or a top 20, or what is that for? And somebody put that down, which is just, look, you know, you want to bash the books for obviously putting that bad of a price out there, but you also got to tell the players, hey, don't bet at that shop. You know, let them know by your dollars that, hey, I'm not going to bet there if you're not going to give me fair odds. But most of the books, including the ones we always talk about here on the air, probably 50, 60, 70-ish to 1. But Phil Mickelson, 4 over par, playing the front 9, playing the 9th hole right now, trying to finish up his round. And yeah, I did think it was a little sentimental. Now, he has lived in San Diego for a long time. Mm. And he has won at this course 3 times at the Farmers Insurance Open / Buick Invitational. But that was like 15 years ago when he did this. This is a U.S. Open, and for a guy that is very erratic off the tee in terms of hitting fairways, this is not a place where you want to miss fairways at the U.S. Open. It's 5 inches high of Kikuyu rough, so that's why you're seeing him get in trouble here. 4 over on his round this afternoon.
And for those of you who missed it, the start of play was delayed by 90 minutes due to fog. It's the first time that's ever happened at a U.S. Open since 2004. So that is why you're seeing a late start. You can still get in a couple more bets, any head-to-head matchups that haven't teed off just yet. So something to consider if you're still looking to make a bet. We have more coming back right here on My Guys in the Desert. We have a new feature on VSiN.com. Every day we're posting the latest betting splits on every game in the major sports with current odds and what percentage of bets and money are being placed on each game. Check this info daily to find out which games are seeing the most tickets written and if that matches the money coming in on those games to help you find a betting edge. And of course, we have all the odds, data, and analysis for every game as well. Start your next sports bet at VSiN.com. Danielle Avari and Wes Reynolds here on My Guys in the Desert, ready to help you start your next NHL bet for tonight. Big game 3 in what will surely be a very loud Nassau Coliseum, rather, in New York, as the Islanders take on the Lightning in a 1-1 series. Puck drop at 8 p.m. Eastern for this one. The Lightning's still a minus 200 favorite on the series here. Do you think that's warranted given the swing in home ice advantage here?
It probably is a little bit warranted because Tampa Bay is the better team, but you mentioned the loud environment. This is going to be as loud as when Billy Joel opened the joint here at the renovated Nassau Coliseum years ago, the Long Island's own Billy Joel, who closed the old building and then opened the new building. So it's going to be wild and wacky here on Long Island here at the Nassau Coliseum, and you're already kind of seeing the Islanders take a little bit of an action. 125 was basically the consensus on the take back for this team for game three. Now you're starting to see as low as 115. I know as I was coming in our previous program on Betting Across America, James Salinas seemed to be taking a liking to the New York Islanders. I can't necessarily disagree with that. I'm priced out of the game. I think the number's about right, so I didn't really see an advantage from that standpoint. But just looking at the series, we've had two very different games here. Game one, New York Islanders kind of took it to Tampa Bay down there at the Amalie Arena. 8-2 in the odd man rush. Only allowed two power plays, and that is a big key for the New York Islanders, who went on defense and went on grit and very good goaltending from Varlamov and also their backup goaltender. So you basically see what they're trying to do. They are trying to stay out of the box. Did a very good job of that in game one. Only allowed Tampa Bay two power play opportunities. This Lightning power play in the playoffs was about 43%. It's now down to 39% because the Islanders, while they didn't stay out of the box in the last game, they really didn't get beat because of the power play. Tampa Bay only 1-for-5 there. It was really Tampa Bay's line, their top line, beating them in the 5-on-5 at even strength. Kucherov, Point, and Andres Palat, they all combined as a trio for 5 points, and they really took it to the New York Islanders. Yeah, the New York Islanders, you know what they're trying to do. If you watch this team, they're trying to keep Tampa Bay wide. They're trying to keep Tampa Bay toward the boards and on the perimeter. They don't want to let them get into the middle of the ice and rush that goaltender. So that's what the Islanders, kind of how they do. They basically absorb a lot of pressure and try to keep you from the outside, you know, taking those long one-timers. They feel they got the defensemen to block those shots, and they certainly have throughout the playoffs. But, you know, eventually in certain games in this series, you're going to have Tampa Bay just making ridiculous plays and being able to score and be potent offensively. And then plus with Andre Vasilevsky, has been very good in between the pipes for this team. Only gave up 2 goals in that first game, and then gave up 2. Islanders got a late goal with the goaltender pulled in game two to get that game over the total. But this is where you have the advantage for the Islanders, and maybe why you're seeing them get a little bit of money. One thing, if you don't know hockey betting or just kind of new to hockey betting, if you're the home team, you get the last line change. So that usually could be a very good advantage. He's got a very good defense, that being Barry Trotz with Ryan Pulock and Adam Palach, who have been very good, I think, by and large, when they've been on the ice against that top line of Kucherov, Point, and Palat. But that was the unit, too. Those were the two D-men that really shut down the Boston Bruins in essentially the second round of the NHL playoffs. So, you know, Barry Trotz, if you followed his career all the way from Nashville and then when he won the Cup a few years ago in D.C., you know that's what he likes to do. He likes to muck up the game a little bit, make it more about defense than goaltending, and not just skate down the ice and make it kind of a wide-open game in 5-on-5. But ironically enough, when I was looking at the numbers, Islanders have scored 3.36 goals a game throughout the playoffs. That's the highest of any team left in the playoffs. This is not a very big-time scoring team when you really look at it. And actually, if you look at the analytics, and I talked to a couple hockey guests here on VSiN earlier this week, it's a hard team to quantify and probably still the hardest team to get a handle on remaining in the playoffs, simply because if you look strictly at analytics, it's like this team was better in the regular season despite the fact that they were fourth in that East division. The numbers are down in terms of high danger chances, in terms of expected goals, 5-on-5, whatever metric you want to throw out there. But the bottom line is they're 1-1 in basically the final four here of the NHL playoffs. So somehow they've been able to get it done. Now, one concern for the Islanders is J.G. Pageau did leave midway through game two. So that's going to be a big loss for the Islanders if he cannot go tonight. I have not seen an update on that status. And as I mentioned at the top with Kenny White, very good home team, home ice. You know, Kenny was talking about how maybe it's not going to matter that much at the Bell Center because you're not going to have full spectators for Montreal. It certainly, I think, has mattered a little bit more here at the Fortress in Las Vegas because you do have full capacity, even though Montreal did get the last game in game two. But New York Islanders, 21-4-3 in the regular season at home, 4-2 in the postseason. And recall, game four and game six of that Boston series won 4-1 and won 6-2. So this is one of the best home ice advantage really remaining here in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I do lean Islanders in the spot, but value's been a little bit extracted. I wanted a little bit higher than 125. It never got higher than that because that was obviously an attractive price for some bettors.
Right. If you were in a situation where this game starts and Tampa Bay gets out to an early lead, would you want to go in live on the Islanders?
That is a distinct possibility that you bring up, Danielle, and that might be what I'm looking to do here. I don't have anything pre-flop. Had the over the other night and it got there late. Same total basically here at five minus like $1.35. It's pretty much the market consensus, some 140 out there too. This is one I'm going to try to see if I can get in on live, but nothing pregame for me.
What about the series? How far do you think this is going to go? Who do you think is going to come out?
I think it's at least going six here, but if you took the Islanders before game one, you were getting around 250. Now you're only getting about 190, 195 here. I think $2 was the high water mark at the Westgate and the Wynn here, right here in Las Vegas. So would need a little bit more because the Islanders now, I think by and large, if you've watched the series, they've been very competitive in the five-on-five when you kind of commingle the two games together. Obviously, game two, it was a little bit more dominant on the Tampa Bay side, but the Islanders, of course, took it to them in game one. So this is kind of that pivotal game, as cliche as it sounds. This is going to determine, I think, what this series is going to be. So I'm sitting out this one unless I find a live spot.
Well, I'd like to get in on the Lightning on the series, but maybe if the Islanders win tonight,
then that might be the time to go ahead and get in. Because keep in mind, these two teams did meet last year in what was essentially the Eastern Conference Finals in that bubble for the Stanley Cup playoffs, and the Lightning did win in six.
Well, Lightning minus 135, Islanders sitting around plus 125, 8 p.m. Eastern start for that NHL playoff game tonight. And then, of course, the Canadiens and the VGK will go off tomorrow. We have more coming up. We'll take a look at some MLB games, maybe some NBA action right here on My Guys in the Desert. Welcome back into the OddsTrader.com studio at the South Point Casino. Make sure you check out OddsTrader.com. And remember, you can download the free OddsTrader app right now and start winning with the up-to-the-second info you need. Danielle Varian, Wes Reynolds back here on My Guys in the Desert. Taking a look at tonight's NBA matchup, we have the Nets and Bucks. Bucks a 5.5-point favorite here. Total sitting around 220, 8:30 Eastern start for this one. Obviously, the Nets win in game five as a 1.5-point underdogs. Push on the total, but the Bucks didn't cover again in game five, failing to cover for the fourth time in five games. At home, they're averaging just about 96.5 points per game in their two games against the Nets. Again, they opened at -3.5, now up to -5.5. What are your thoughts on this one, Wes?
Yeah, initially I thought that the number was a little bit high. I'm not going to get involved, I don't think, from a full game standpoint, simply because I got that series event, and I don't know how tricky or crazy with the cheese whiz I want to get here in terms of trying to work a middle. Remember, obviously, this Nets team, record in the NBA in terms of all-time offensive rating at 118.6 this season. However, you look in this series, and obviously Kyrie being out last game and then James Harden missing games have kind of set this down, but only 107.9 offensive rating for this Brooklyn team in this series. Kevin Durant, obviously magnificent, one of the great playoff performances, at least in recent NBA history. So can he go ahead and do it again? But I think that the Nets, look, what we saw out of James Harden, look, he was there, but he wasn't really there. So you don't know if, okay, he's going to rebound here, but he did not look very good. You've got a Brooklyn team kind of running out of bodies. If they hadn't gotten Jeff Green back, they would have really been in trouble because Durant got all the headlines, but Jeff Green was absolutely massive. James Harden, however, was not. He scored 5 points total now through five games this series. You could tell he was laboring really in game five. And he played a ton of minutes, too. It's not like they really restricted his minutes the the other night. He's on a hamstring that's clearly nowhere near 100%. We've talked about these hamstring injuries before. Had it with Will Barton in Denver. You just don't come back right away from these hamstring injuries.
I think that people were expecting more out of him. They saw him on the court so much, but they're forgetting that he's dealing with a soft tissue injury.
Yeah, and he was 0 of 8 from 3-point range. He hardly was able to get to the line, just didn't have that get off in terms of his first step driving to the basket. 26% turnover percentage. So, look, had Durant not done this, I think the media would probably be, even though he's injured, would be going after James Harden a little bit. So Kevin Durant's probably the Beard's best friend after what happened last time. Now you're looking on the Milwaukee side. If you're, I guess, an optimist for Milwaukee, eventually you think maybe the shots are going to fall. This team averaged 120 points in the regular season. They've been held to 108 or under. 108 was the high watermark, actually, in Game 5 where they lost. They've been averaging just 98.8 points a game in this series against this Nets defense that was absolutely bottom of the barrel all season. The Bucks are at 100 even on an offensive rating, obviously not playing at the usual pace and still not really getting good shots up. And then the shots they do get up, they're not making enough of them. Milwaukee has only made about 9.8 threes a game against the Brooklyn Nets. They made about 14.5 in the regular season. So that's a pretty substantial drop off. Only shooting 29% from outside the arc. Giannis certainly contributing to that, maybe taking too many of those outside shots. It's like getting the paint or drive to the rim, big guy. So Milwaukee also, what you've seen with this offense, they've been very stagnant. And this is something I've been tweeting about and watching these games. A lot of one-on-one play. Not a lot of ball movement. Not a lot of movement off the ball when they're really at their best. Only 18 assists per game as a team for Milwaukee, about 18.5. And they average 25.5 in the regular season. So You're waiting to see if this offense finally breaks out here, and you just want to see them find a little bit of answers. Maybe they did find something putting Giannis more at center.
Right.
I think it has been a little bit of a help instead of maybe so much Brooke Lopez. They're putting Giannis at the center where he can at least make plays and be a very good passer on offense. PJ Tucker had two, I think, pretty solid games in Milwaukee defending Kevin Durant. Obviously, Game 5 did not go very swimmingly, but, you know, he's not going to be able to do it by himself. So you got to see what Milwaukee is going to do with this rotation. He kind of tightened that rotation, actually, against the Milwaukee Bucks because Mike Budenholzer has gotten criticism, and I think rightfully deserved, over the last couple of years, where it's like, hey, you're only playing Giannis like 34 and 35 minutes. This is not a game in November on a Wednesday night in the regular season. That dude needs to go 45 minutes and maybe even sometimes all 48. So, look, I think Milwaukee just got overwhelmed by a darn near historic performance guy, Kevin Durant. So I would certainly lean to that spot here. And where I may look to go, instead of full game, because you kind of worry maybe you're going to get that Milwaukee collapse like you got in Game 5, that they would start out a little bit better. So maybe looking at the first half here. Now, the first half spread, I believe right now, is 3.5. You're starting to see some threes in the market, though. So if you look at the money line in the first half, 180, I think, is the low in the market here. It's as high as $2. That might be where I would look and maybe use that in a parlay with something else if you don't want to lay that $2. But I certainly would think that Milwaukee would get off to a better start tonight now that they have the urgency being down 3-2.
In terms of the total for tonight's game, Kenny White was on with us earlier. He said his play for this game is going to be over the 220. How do you think this one's going to play out in terms of total?
And I don't necessarily disagree with Kenny. It's obviously hard to take it over considering the last game was the first one we had in this series go over. But as I mentioned a moment ago, Giannis being moved to the center position, I think, does help them offensively and does allow them to kind of space the floor a little bit better, get some guys some shots, get some shots, get Middleton some shots, Connaughton. They've got some guys that can shoot threes, Holiday as well. They just have not been making them this series. So it's like, is tonight the night where they kind of finally go down a little bit? Because they certainly have not done so far, at least in this series. The offensive numbers have been way down pretty much across the board with Milwaukee.
All right, we'll come back to that game a little bit later on, but let's dive in a little bit to the MLB slate for tonight. Looking at earlier, the Indians did come away with the win against the Orioles 10-3. And then going on right now, we have the Diamondbacks and the Giants, who also faced off last night. The Giants did cover that run line. I believe Amal Shaw was on that, and I tailed him on that, so that did come home pretty easily. Right now, Giants are up 6-0 in the top of the seventh. What do you think about this matchup going on right now, Wes?
Yeah, Arizona continues to struggle on the road. And
Fade Arizona.
I've almost lost count of what the number is for Arizona in terms of how many they lost on the road. I think at last check it was 18. Maybe somebody can find that for me here on the spot real quick to see if that's in fact true. But
the point is that's way too high.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Orioles have actually not won a road game since May 5th, and you mentioned they lost earlier today 10-3 to the Indians, and Arizona has not won a road game since May 25th. So they keep losing, and it's, you know, you want to think, okay, this is the spot really to bet them. And what a lot of wise guys will look to do is they're kind of looking to beat the streak here. And you can get stubborn as a bettor because it's like, this number, I know that they've been bad, but this number is way too high because people are looking at the raw numbers and not necessarily betting teams. And that's what we encourage people to do is look at the numbers and don't just necessarily bet a team. But Arizona, look, again today, big underdogs and not even close, 6-1, because Kevin Gausman is somebody that you expect some regression out here as we approach about the end of the first half of the season. Did not see it today. Arizona has been absolutely pitiful about going to go to 20-50 on the season.
When I asked him all yesterday about his play on the run line for the Giants, I said, that's more a fade of the Diamondbacks, correct? And he said, yes. So no surprise that that paid off for him. And it looks like if you did take the run line on the Giants again today, that is looking pretty solid for you as well. Later game tonight, 7:20 p.m., the Cardinals and the Braves. John Gant on the mound for the Cardinals and Charlie Morton for the Braves. Now, you've been fading John Gant. Are you going to continue tonight?
Yeah, and look, the word is out about John Gant, too. When you look at what this opening number was, it was $1.65 in the overnights. Now you're seeing some 190s in the market. I usually don't like to follow a 25-cent move, so I wouldn't necessarily lay it. And I'm not a guy that likes to lay 1.5 on the run line either. I just have not had good luck. I have better luck actually taking the 1.5 and laying some vig, especially when a game gets bet under the total. So what I'm probably going to look to do is put Atlanta at least in a parlay piece here, because I still think there's some regression coming for John Gant. 3.36 ERA, 5.46 on the xFIP, still about over a 2-run difference. Charlie Morton, peripherals have been a little bit better. You see that ERA of 4.5, but he's really only about 3.5 on the xFIP. Atlanta certainly has been scoring runs. You saw it against Boston really the last two nights, but the bullpen has not been solid and the Red Sox got the win. So if you want to look perhaps first five and avoid that bullpen, now you're going to pay even more of a tax. It's a little bit over $2. So probably the way you would want to look is go ahead and lay the run line in the first five. I usually don't do run line for the full game, but I don't mind necessarily doing it for the first five. I'm basically seeing minus a half run, minus $1.35. If you don't think John Gann is long for this game, that would be certainly the way I would go.
One other game we can sneak in here really quick. The Tigers and the Angels. Matt Manning on the mound for the Tigers, making his MLB debut. And for the Angels, Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, Tigers did come off the sweep here in Kansas City, so they've been playing at least some decent ball. Obviously, Matt Manning, a big underdog. He was the first-round pick of the Tigers back in 2016 out of Sheldon High School in Sacramento, so a very young man. Now finally getting his first start in the big leagues, age 23. So you don't really have a ton of data to go on with Matt Manning unless you really get into the minor league data and looking at that going forward. So I guess probably the way I would look, because I don't want to lay $2 here in this spot with an Angels team that's inconsistent. And the Tigers are not a very good team, but they've actually been a little bit better than expected. You know, Matt Manning has some decent stuff. Fastball goes up to about 95, so he has at least some solid stuff. But this is the first start here a little bit. Tigers have actually been hitting the ball decent of late. So the way I would probably look at this is going over 9.
Wow. 9?
Yes.
All right. Yeah,
I'm seeing nine.
We've been seeing higher scoring. Definitely.
Yeah, it is getting bet to the under, though. But I think you see some 8.5s here in the market. 8.5 minus $1.20. 9 minus $1.20. So obviously you'd rather take the 8.5 if you're taking the over.
Well, since all the sticky substance talk has been going on, I think we've been seeing a little bit higher scoring games. So no surprise there. We'll be back with the second hour of My Guys in the Desert next.